You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 593. No time for an intro this week, and no time for introductions, and no time for an intro song. Why? Because My Chemical Romance just released their first song in like 6 or 7 years, a few minutes ago, and more. Talk about the new My Chemical Romance song while I read this Batman comic book. Go!
All right, so My Chemical Romance, their last new song was, before this one, was 2014's aptly titled Fake Your Death, which came out on their compilation of, I believe, the same name, which was like, you know, they broke up and then they released this and everyone's like, oh no, and there's not a series. But anyway, now we know that they did indeed fake their death and they are back with The Foundations of Decay, which is their new song, and it's 6 minutes. And so I didn't know this was happening today, and I was finishing dinner, and my friend texted me and was like, hey, MCR just released a new song. And I was like, what? So I had to get on the internet really fast and listen to it. And let me tell you, I have barely stopped listening to this song since it came out. I am so excited. I really hope there's a new album coming soon, because it's about damn time. But yeah, like, the song is so good. It has everything in it. Like, in the first 30 seconds, you hear Black Parade, or elements from Black Parade, from Three Cheers, from Danger Days, and like a little bit of Bullets. And it's just like, oh my God. And then the lyrics are great. The lyrics are up on Genius Now, and I was reading through them, and oh my gosh, like there's so many. Like, they mention, so they're talking about like a man on a hill, and then they mention he was there watching the two towers fall, which is a reference to the band being like born, because My Chemical Romance was birthed because Gerard Way was in New York at the time of 9/11 and was like, wow, I have to do something with my life. So he started the band, and oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. And their reunion tour kicks off, like, I think next week or this weekend in the UK. And then they're going to come to Toronto and I'm going to see them. And I'm so excited. And oh my God, I can't overstate how much, like, today has been very, very hot here. So I was trying to like keep the excitement kind of down, because it's like, I want to like remain calm sort of, and just couldn't do it. Just, oh my God. John, did you listen to it?
Watch out, Batman. The Penguin's right behind you. Oh, no, listen. If something makes M more happy, then it gets 2 thumbs up for me, because M more brings Brennan to the world. And so if this makes M more happy, then I'm all for it. My Chemical Romance is back and people are excited, and M more is down with it, and she's gone and she's going to have fun. And M more having fun, it's a good thing. So yeah, My Chemical Romance is now out. Here's something else that just came out. Riot Fest. They announced their full lineup, and it is quite the lineup. And there are a lot of bands are playing, and here's headlining. The Misfits doing Walk Among Us is headlining. Nine Inch Nails is headlining, and also My Chemical Romance is headlining.
Woo!
And more. Are you going to go to Chicago to see My Chemical Romance?
Wait, what's the dates are?
September 17, 18, 19, I think.
That would be, I think, a week or 2 weeks after the concert. I mean, I could go. It would be so cool. I'd love to go, because, yeah, there's so many just, like, awesome people. Like, obviously, MCR. And, I mean, like, I'm going to try not to talk about them, like, for the whole podcast, but, like, seriously, like, okay, MCR.
More, how often do I talk about Dan Yang or the Melvins or the Dwarves or Crazy in the Brains or Mean Jeans? If ever there was a time to let the MCR rip, let it rip. That's what I'm saying. Also playing is Bauhaus, Sunday Day Real Estate, Placebo, Jeff Rosenstock, Lunatics, Linda Lindas, Yellow Card, Alkaline Trio, Bad Religion, Descendants, Ice Cube, Slater, Candy, Jimmy Eat World, Wonder Years, Rock from the Crypt, Less Than Jake, Lagwagon, Sincere Engineer, Destroyed Boys, Bob Villain, Menzingers, Alexis on Fire, Guar, Get Up Kids, Madball, Fear, 7 Seconds, Thick, Surfboard, Drawbox, Mom Jeans, Bomb Pops, and a whole bunch of other bands that aren't kind of punk and kind of pop or hip hop or whatever. I got to say, this is a big lineup, a lot of names on here, but a lot of bands I would like to see. And really, I guess you should measure a fest in bands that you want to see. as opposed to bands you don't care about, because you're not seeing every band. You're only seeing the bands you want to see. And frankly, there's a lot of bands here that I would like to see. I've seen the original Misfits live twice. The first time, they were awesome, but the venue was horrible. It was up in Newark, New Jersey, and the sound was terrible. Second time, they were awesome, and the venue was cool. It was in the Philadelphia, Wells Fargo Center, I guess it was. The Misfits were, they just sounded great. It was an awesome show. They played like 35 songs, and it kicked ass. I don't know if the Misfits doing Walk Among Us is anything special, because Walk Among Us is like 24 minutes long, and so live's probably like 20 minutes, and they do almost all those songs live anyways. So I guess it's cool to hear them in order, except for Walk Among Us. I mean, it's an amazing album, but it's not so much an album as it is a collection of songs. Like, it doesn't have much, like Earth AD is an album. It's got a beginning, a middle, and end, where Walk Among Us is just like, here's a song, here's a song, here's a song. And it's a great album, and I love it, but I don't know if seeing that, you know, in that order makes that much of a difference. That being said, I'm sure they'll be awesome. I know Misfits played Riot Fest before, and the complaint was it was a huge field, so the energy or the vibe was different from a field as than seeing them in a quote club or an arena, because it's big, it's outdoor, there's 70,000 people there instead of 16,000 or whatever. That being said, I'm pretty sure it'll still be cool to see. Plus Bauhaus is playing, Ice Cube's playing, although honestly, like, I've seen Ice Cube, well, I saw Ice Cube a couple of times, I love Ice Cube, but he kind of takes it easy on stage, which is a bummer, because in the early 90s, he was awesome on stage. I think he discovered weed, and that really kind of negatively affected him a great amount, frankly. Guar will be cool to see. Fear will be cool to see. Surfboard will be cool. Weirdly, though, Surfboard was, like, very bottom of the list. And honestly, like, I thought Surfboard was bigger than that. Is that just because I'm a fan? Like, I felt like Surfboard should be placed higher on, like, the name recognition. Like, let me see. And maybe that's just because I'm a fan. But, like, they were, like, blow bands that I thought, like, Surfboard was way, way bigger than. Give me a second here.
Like, their tours, too. Like, with the pictures from their tours, the shows are sold out. Like, the venues are packed.
Yeah, exactly. But here we go. Like, Surfboard is across all 3 days. Surfboard is like, below a band called, like, Jake Hill or Charlotte Sands or even, like, War on Women or LS Dunes. Like, I think Surfboard's bigger than all those bands, aren't they? Yet Surfboard is actually literally the No Trigger, like Surfboard and Bridge City Center, Surfboard's bigger than them, aren't they? Maybe they're not. I don't know. I just thought it was a very weird placement for Surfboard. Like, I would expect Surfboard to either be the second or maybe the third line down, not the last on the fifth line down, you know?
Yeah. That placement's weird.
Maybe just because I'm a fan. I don't know, you know? So anyways, I guess here's a question, Edmore. When Descendants reunited, it was a huge deal anytime they played a concert. And anytime Descendants played a concert, it was a big deal. But now that the Descendants have been reunited for like 5 or 6 years now, and they've played a lot of festivals, is seeing the Descendants a big deal? I mean, because I've seen them now like 4 or 5 times, and I only went to a Descendants show once. I've just been to so many festivals. I haven't been to that many festivals, but I've been to a few festivals over the past 5 years, and Descendants are always there, which is cool because seeing the Descendants live is great, and they were amazing at Riot Fest. But the question is seeing the Descendants live special, or is it like seeing Bad Religion, as in if you're a Bad Religion fan, it's like, oh, I get to see Bad Religion, or even Rancid, like, like, Rancid plays a lot of festivals, but seeing Rancid isn't that special in that you can see Rancid in a lot of places, you know? Is that where Descendants are at right now, or is there still – like, if you go see Misfits, it's like, oh, boy, I get to see the Misfits. It's a rare thing that I probably won't get to see too many times, you know? Are Descendants now just another touring act is the question.
I think Descendants still have, like, a special kind of sheen to them, you know, because – there's so many people, like, I've never seen the Descendants live, and I'd really like to see the Descendants live. So I think there's a lot of people who would kind of be in the same boat. Because I'm just trying to think, like, I don't know the last time the Descendants came to Canada. But just kind of what I've learned is when you have a chance to see a band, like, you got to grab it because it's, you know, you're going to regret it. So I think the Descendants are still special because, you know, like, looking back at the albums, like, they mean so much to you. and you kind of like sometimes you grow with them. So I think Descendants are a band like that, where you listen to the old stuff, you really like the old stuff, and you can carry some of the old stuff through with you. And then their Hypercaffeum Spazinate album, like that one was so good. And it just really, it was like, yes, this band rules. So I think they still have a wow factor. I don't think they're just another touring band right now.
Saturday alone, you can see Misfits, Bauhaus, Gwar, Thick, and Surfboard all in one day. That's pretty cool.
That'd be neat. And Sunny Day Real Estate's back. They're reunited.
Hooray.
They're playing this.
Hot dog.
Not a fan?
If people dig them, that's good enough for me. I mean, I've never been to Riot Fest, and the question is, like, you know, sometimes festivals can be a bummer in that, you know, it's a big stage, there's a million people there, it's hard to see the band. Whereas, like, Punk Rock Bowling really is a lot of fun, because even though it's a big stage, it still has a good... Well, cool thing about Punk Rock Bowling is it's right on the old strip. So even when you're not on the festival grounds itself, the party is still going on, you know? I don't know if Riot Fest is like that, frankly, you know?
Yeah, it seems like they have vendors, but I don't know. That's not really the same kind of environment.
I mean, not to stroke Punk Rock Bowling too much, but I am bummed it isn't this year. But like Punk Rock, and I've given this disclaimer 100 times. Punk News used to sponsor Punk Rock Bowling, and there wasn't a big scuffle, but there was a tiny tiff, you know. And so that being said, Punk Rock Bowling is awesome. I mean, it's on the old strip. You wake up, you have fun in the morning or early afternoon. You go to Punk Rock Bowling, then you go to the after show, and then you can keep having fun or go to sleep. And it's all on the same three blocks. So it's like a huge three-block party, you know? So, anyways, I hope Punk Rock Bowling comes back. Emma, what if Punk Rock Bowling never comes back?
They have to bring it back.
What will we do, Em? What will we do?
We'll have to rent a bowling alley and play music, take over the PA system, and just blast punk music really, really loud.
As a side note, Em, are you going to Rebellion Fest? Because I'm thinking about going to Rebellion Fest. Rebellion Fest is looking pretty sweet. And flights are only $800.
The lineup is crazy, and I would love to go. I just need to check out the financials. That's the big thing.
You got to do it. You got like 5 months to do it. You got to do it, Em.
Send me money.
So anyway, have you considered selling drugs? No, don't do drugs. Drugs are bad. As I learned yesterday, as then more knows, but I'm not going to detail. Anyways, Mikey Erg. This is a throwback story. Literally 10 years ago, Against Me announced we don't have a drummer. We're trying to get a drummer. And this was when, I guess, this was when there were fewer music sites and when people weren't as serious all the time, honestly. And so we, and by we, I mean me, had the wacky idea to throw a campaign to get Mikey Erg elected into Against Me, even though we hadn't consulted with Mikey Erg, and even though being a drummer is not an elected position. And so we actually did a whole bunch of articles about how we think Mikey Erg should be elected into Against Me. And we did a whole campaign thing, and people were like, a drummer's not an elected position. This doesn't make any sense. Drummers don't get elected. And it's like... And we never let on, but it's like, yeah, that's the joke, you know. And we actually did a petition where we had over 1,000 people sign a petition to make Mikey Erg the drummer of Against Me. And I actually sent it to Laura Jane Grace. And I think Mikey Erg talked about this. And so I don't think I'm blowing up his spot. But actually, what people don't know is when he was down in Florida later that year, he did jam with Laura Jane Grace. But he was not taken into Against Me, and rather Adam Willard was. And so 10 years later, Mikey Erg is still not Against Me. However, he right now he's on tour with Laura Jane Grace, Tim Kashner. Let's see who else. Tim Kashner, Anthony Green, Laura Jane Grace, and Mikey Erg. And at the show in Asbury Park, Mikey Erg did drum on an Against Me song with Laura Jane Grace. They drummed on... the song Unconditional Love. And so finally the circle is complete, and Mikey Erg at least has done something of a live performance with Laura Jane Grace / Against Me. It was a momentous occasion. Were you thrilled by this, Emmore?
I was not aware of the previous petition to make Mike Yerg the drummer of Against Me, but I those are linked in the story, so I checked those out. And, like, that's great. Like, that's so fun. And there are so many signatures. I was really surprised that it got over 1,000. Like, that's great. And the campaign trail interview was really funny. And it was all like, see, it works. Exactly. Like you said in the article, never discount local politics. the clip of the song was awesome. Mike Yerg is a great drummer. Did a great job on the song. And maybe this is the beginning of something really special, because Against Me hasn't been active for a while. Maybe this is going to be kind of like a little Easter egg, you know?
Yeah. Like, what do you think is happening? Do you think Against Me is over? Do you think Against Me is on pause? Do you think Laura Jane Grace is going to debut a brand new Against Me with all new people? What do you? Mm-hmm. And because right now Adam Willard is like doing something in another band. I forget what it is. What do you think is going on with Against Me? Do you think it's the end? And also, I'll point out, Laura Jane Grace, like, within the past, like, 3 or 4 years, keeps debuting, like, new projects. It's either Laura Jane Grace or it's Laura Jane Grace and the Wandering Mother. No,
Devouring Mothers.
The Devouring Mothers. But also, yeah. Like, there was another, like, side project that came out, like, not that long ago. And also, there was the Stay Alive album that came out in 2020. So there's a Stay Alive album, and then there was Laura Jane Grace and the Devouring Mothers, which was 2018. But I think we're forgetting something. I think Laura had, like, another project as well, right?
We are, yeah, because I remember listening to it. I don't remember what the name of it is.
Maybe it was an EP or something.
They released a full album.
That's what it was. At War with Silverfish. That was an EP.
That was her solo one.
Well, that was her solo EP, but she had a solo album, Stay Alive, too, that did have that very cool video with the skeleton chasing, I think it was a young lady, I forget what it was.
That was cool.
So anyways, what do you think is going on with Against Me? Do you think it's the end? Do you think it's the beginning? What do you think is going to happen?
I don't think it's the end. I think it's one of those situations where, like, she is other ideas for other songs, and those ideas and those songs are kind of urgent. So it's like, I got to get this out. I got to release it. I'm going to do it solo because I can do it by myself and get it out on my own schedule. I think that's what's going on, because with the pandemic, like over the past couple years, it's been really hard to keep in contact with people and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I'm sure the band might be a little bit disconnected and everyone doing their own thing. So I don't think it's the end. I think they're going to come back. But that's really interesting that you brought up, like, are they going to come back with a whole new lineup? That I could see that happening, you know?
Yeah, I mean...
What do you think?
I do think that Laura Jane Grace isn't using the Against Me banner, because Against Me is... I mean, at this point, like, the only consistent member is Laura Jane Grace, and I guess arguably Adam Willard, but obviously Adam Willard isn't an owner. I mean, let me take a quick look. Again, so the members of hypothetically, the members of Against Me right now are Laura Jane Grace, Adam Willard, Andrew Stewart's been in the band for a long time, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And James Bowman too, right? Let's see here. Yeah, James Bowman actually been in the band a long, long time. Yes, at least 20 years. They both have, yeah. Oh, I guess Against Me still is kind of a full-on band. I thought one of those guys would quit or got fired or something. You know, let's see. Band members. Bowman's still in the band. And, Seward was out, but he rejoined in 2019. Okay.
That's what it was.
So there are a lot of long-running members in the band, Laura, Bowman, and Seward. So, really the only person that's not, like, an OG or almost an OG is the drummer, which is Adam Willard. And the band's had a lot of drummers. I guess the fact of the matter is, if a band is a financially successful band that people will pay to see, which Against Me is, one would think that they would be doing stuff together to make money. And the fact that they aren't suggests that maybe there's more going on under the surface. You know what I mean? And so, So maybe there is discord. That being said, I think Against Me will return in some form. I don't think it'll be the end of the band, but I do think that maybe Against Me is kind of in a third act, in that like maybe not every album will be as important. Like, you know, Against Me all the way through Blues, Transgender Dysphoria Blues. Yeah. Every album was kind of an event, and it kind of changed the band trajectory, you know. But I think maybe they're past that point, and now they're just in their veteran status, and so they'll put out albums, and the fans will get them and like them, but it won't radically change who the band is, you know.
I think they have another couple radical changes left.
You think so?
I think so.
What do you think you're gonna put, like, a hardcore record, or like a reggae record, or a disco record, or dance record?
That'd be cool. I listen to all of them, to be honest.
How about a death metal record?
Cool. Yes. Go full death metal. Oh my gosh, accordions. Yes. Ska.
We'll just have to wait. What I will say is, I'm not even an Against Me fan. I'm not a hater except for one thing, but just putting that aside, I think what the band does need to do is commit to something. Like, I think it's, you can't make everybody happy all the time. And when a band does try to make everybody happy all the time, kind of like Rancid, financially that works out. You know, Rancid headlines festivals and people love to see them, and they put on a cool show, you know. But does anybody really care about the last four Rancid albums? No, because they're just kind of generic Rancid albums. I think they haven't committed, like, you know, with Rancid, the first album was street punk. The first two albums were kind of street punk albums. They did Out Come the Wolves, which was sort of a throwback to first wave punk. Then they did the ska album, or the experimental Sandinista style album. Then they did a hardcore album. Then they did kind of the pop rock album, which was kind of cool, which was indestructible. Then they kind of lost their footing. I think Against Me could honestly just put out some, quote, generic Against Me albums that people would like them, and they would stay at the top of festivals. But artistically, if they wanted to keep moving, I think they needed to commit to, like, a new angle each time, I think. And that's kind of what you have to do if you want to remain artistically interesting, I think. So, speaking of artistically interesting, Bite Me Baby is putting out a 7-inch single. And here's why that single is quite interesting, is because the A side is a song called Crazy, and they had the sadly departed Lee Scratch Perry mix or remix the track. The B side is a cover of Lee Scratch Perry / Junior Mervis' Police and Thieves, which of course was covered by The Clash. This is coming out on the great label, Stay Free Recordings, who did that awesome Steve Ignorant does David Bowie tribute record, which was kind of cool, or benefit record, I should say. And so they put out a lot of cool stuff, that label. Bite Me Baby. Oh, and the cover is done by Shepard Fairey, and every copy comes with a 7-inch slip mat, which is his point is because a 12-inch slip mat also works on a 7-inch, so I guess it doesn't make much sense. At any rate, I've got strong opinions about this, and more. Do you want to kick it off? You want me to kick it off?
Kick it off.
I say kudos to Bite Me Baby. I think it's cool that they got Lee Scratch Perry to work on a track. I've been somewhat critical of Bite Me Baby, and I don't think they're a bad band. I think they're all very talented. Just kind of what put me off is the music seemed kind of kiddie, or just kind of a little too sugary sweet. That being said, they saw an opportunity to work with Perry, and they took it. And frankly, I'm jealous, and kudos to them. And the reason I'm jealous is because for a while you could pay Lee Scratch Perry $600, and he would do new vocals on whatever track you sent him. And I had the idea to do a new version of Punky Reggae Party, which is a song he wrote and which Bob Marley recorded, and have a new version of that song, and have a bunch of punkers record it, and then have him sing new vocals over the top, and we would make that the last track on the third Punk News mixtape. And I was sort of going to do it, and I laid out it'd be about $1,000 total for everything, which is, I mean, and the reason I hesitated is like, well, I mean, I'm not going to sell that many cassettes, you know, so I'm just kind of throwing $1,000 in the trash can. But it would be cool to have Lee Perry do that. But on the other hand, I'm kind of just paying Lee Perry to hang out with me, essentially, you know. But it still would be a cool artistic thing to do. And so I put that on the back burner, and quite sadly, he died quite suddenly, and we're all very sad about it. So kudos to Bite Me Baby to utilizing Perry and kind of introducing him to maybe an audience that might not know a whole lot about him. What's interesting about this is apparently he's mixing or remixing the track, and he's not singing over it. Now, maybe that's just because at the time he wasn't singing, or maybe that's because they wanted him to mix, which honestly, he's more important in music for his mixing and production than he is his vocal styles. Although he's a very great singer as well. Not traditionally, but interestingly, I think he's one of the greatest reggae singers ever. And so maybe that's why they had him mix instead of sing. I would have expected they would have him sing, because the way it worked is you give him $600 and he yells for 3 minutes and he gives it back to you, you know. So I think it's cool that they did that. I think the version of Police and Thieves is kind of cool. Again, I think it's still maybe a little too sugary sweet, but that being said, that's just a personal taste, and I think Bite Me Bambi did a real cool thing here, and I'm going to buy it unless it's super expensive. The reason it might be expensive is because Shepherd Fairey's involved, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I think it's just cool that Bite Me Bambi did it. I like their song, and I think it's cool. Emma, what do you say?
I think it's neat. I was really surprised that they worked with Lee Scratch Perry on it, because it was like, how did they get connected? Like, what happened? What's the story here? But
$600, that's how it works. Like, what happened?
Mystery solved.
He's worked with a couple of different producers. One of the last ones he was working with was a guy called EMCH, who runs Subatomic Sound System, who's a okay. cool guy. And so when Lee Perry was in New York, like EMCH would put up a thing saying, if you want Lee Scratch Perry to do a dub plate for you, let us know, $600. You know, that's how you would do it.
Okay. But no, like, I think the songs are really good. I like the like with Crazy, it does have like a deeper sound to it. It does have more of a, I like it better than the original. I like this remix a lot better than the original. Like the original is okay, but this one's really cool. There's more kind of going on, and then it gives the lyrics kind of an ominous kind of tone almost. You know, where it's like, yeah, it's fun and it's upbeat and it's kind of like bubblegummy, but there's something under the surface, you know? And then Police and Thieves is just a great song, and they did a great job covering it. I thought it was really cool. And I didn't know Shepherd Fairey did the art. That's neat. But now I can see it, like the style and stuff. What's the story with the artwork?
Okay, well, first of all, let's say that it is very cool that Bite Me Bambi did this, and I like this song, and I think Bite Me Bambi did a cool job here, and I'm excited to get this record. That being said, man, everyone loves Shepherd Fairey, and I just don't get it, man. Like this image that we're looking at is a very famous Lee Scratch Perry picture. I probably have about 50 Lee Scratch Perry CDs and probably 25 Lee Scratch Perry records. This picture, the picture that was the basis for this image, the 7-inch cover, is probably in at least 10 of those things. This is one of the most famous Lee Scratch Perry pictures. And so Shepherd Fairey, like, just puts a high contrast on it and, like, colors in the darker to make it, like, totally black. And he's like, here you go. And everyone's like, oh, my God, Shepherd Fairey's so great. Like he just puts, like, a dark contrast on, like, a high contrast on stuff and says, hey, like, on Photoshop, you can play with the contrast. So I feel like all he does is opens up Photoshop, puts contrast, puts the turner all the way to the right, and says he's done. Like I just don't get the hype around Shepherd Fairey at all. I mean, I get a little bit, because, like, it is distinctive looking, but it just seems very lazy to me. I know he did the cover for Jello Biafra's first Guantanamo School of Medicine album, and actually I thought it was kind of bad, because he just took a picture of Jello and he changed, like, he upped the contrast, but you can't really tell it's Jello. It doesn't look like Jello. And there's another, like, I think he did like a Joe Strummer one or Darby Crash one, and it was like, oh my God, it's so great. He just took a very famous picture of Darby Crash and did it and put it in high contrast and put a color on it. Like, I'm like so unimpressed by like it's a unique style, and the first time you see it, it's like, oh, that's cool. But he's done it like 50 times or 100 times now. He just takes an iconic image and puts it in high contrast, and I just don't know why everyone says that it's so great and clever, because the original picture is good, but the high contrast version is basically the same, I guess. I'm just unimpressed by it. I mean, do you love this cover art, or what do you think?
It's cool.
Like, is this worth like $300,000? Because that's like what it costs.
Oh God,
no. I mean, if you commission Shepherd Fairey to do something, like it's like super expensive. It's like $300,000, you know.
Holy shit. Like, his stuff's cool. Like, I like some of the, you know, like you said, there's a distinctive looking look to it. Some of the stuff does look cool. It's such an iconic thing, like especially with the he did the Obama Hope thing, right?
Yeah, but he didn't make, he just took an existing picture and put high contrast on it.
Yeah.
I will give him credit that he did. He simplified it, which made it a more powerful image. I agree with you there, you know.
But what are your feelings on Andy Warhol? Because he kind of did the same thing with the soup cans and Marilyn Monroe.
Well, I guess, but first of all, Andy Warhol did it before Shepard Fairey, so I guess he gets points there. But also, Shepard Fairey had, Andy Warhol, with the point of the soup can is it's just a soup can that already exists. Like, that's the point, you know, he's saying, is me just repainting a normal item that was created for commercial purposes, is that art? That's the question. But Shepard Fairey, subtracts the question. He, prepares a soup can and says, that's art! Not, is it art, or why is it art? This is art, pay me money. I don't know, I'm impressed by his work, but I just think he's overrated, frankly, and I think there's people that do way cooler stuff than him. And also, I think maybe his first few pieces were interesting, but now he's repeated that trick so many times, it just comes off as lazy and boring. That's what I'm saying. You know? Like, he's done the Obama image so many times now, it's just not interesting, you know? Or, actually, the Misfits paid him to do a whole lot. I mean, paid him a lot to do a Misfits poster. And he just took the Crimson Ghost and, kind of put, a red circle around it. It's like, who gives a shit? You know? Like, I don't know, man.
The creativity is through the roof.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying the creativity is not there at all, you know? Maybe people disagree with me. I just feel like that his current work, especially, is just lazy and on his... Actually, if you look at his go to Google and put in Bad Brains Into the Future Shepard Fairey.
Bad Brains Into the Future Shepard Fairey.
Yeah. They hired Shepard Fairey to read you a Bad Brains album cover.
Okay.
Are you looking at it?
Into the Future Shepard
Fairey.
Yeah. I spelled his name wrong. That's fine. It corrected it. All right. I am seeing it.
Yeah, so the Shepard Fairey redo of Into the Future, it just says Into the Future and it's got a rocket ship on the O. That just seems lazy to me. You know what I mean?
It looks like it kind of looks like an old cigarette container. That's what it reminds me of.
But it would almost be more clever if he did make it look like an old cigarette container. You know what I mean? I just think he's just, I don't know, we're beating up Shepard Fairey a lot, but I just think everyone's here's what it is. It's everyone's like, oh, this Lee Scratch Perry image is so amazing. And I'm saying, do you all really think that it is? Or are you just saying that it is because it's Shepard Fairey? Because I look at it and he barely changed the original image and he just kind of put the generic Shepard Fairey, filter over the top. And that's all that it is, and everyone's saying that it's great when it really is. Or do they actually feel it's great? And if they feel it's great, then what about it is great? I wish someone could explain that to me. Anyways, that's my long-winded thoughts on Shepard Fairey. In other stories, the iPod is now discontinued. I'm sad, but I actually haven't used an iPod in a while because I have some generic MP3 player knockoff that was $35 because I break mine all the time. And so the iPod was great. I remember when the iPod first came out in the 90s, it was like my friend had one of the first, not iPods, but MP3 players. And the big deal was it could hold 100 songs or something. So 4 CDs, not 1 CD, you know. And now, you know, iPods can hold thousands of CDs, frankly. And then now they don't exist. But what's interesting is iPods kind of are the savior of music, but also actually not really. They were cool in that you had to buy music and then transfer it to your iPod. Now, of course, you could legally download music, but that's not the iPod's fault. But then streaming came along and destroyed the iPod because why would you download stuff when you can just stream it with even more ease? And I've got feelings about that, but I guess the MP3 player is still around, so I'm not going to cry about Apple not having a product anymore because I don't really care about Apple. But it was a cool device, and it did revolutionize portable music for about 10 or 15 years. And we're at the end of an era, just like we're into the Walkman and Discman era. Do you care, or you not give a shit at all?
I have strong opinions.
What's your opinion?
This sucks. I have, My iPod was one of the best things I've ever received in my life. It was like I campaigned to get it and then, got it as a birthday gift. And it was like one of the best days of my life. And it was the first kind of like freedom that I had. And it was like, I can choose what I listen to and I can choose who I support and I can carry this around with me. And, you know, if like someone's being dumb, I can plug in and I can, you know, listen to Green Day or, you know, whatever. And it also kind of like opened my eyes to a lot of pop music because at that point it was just like, if it's on the radio, I know it and I've memorized it. And if it's not on the radio, I don't know what it is. And the radio is like local stations and oldies and The Rock and, you know, kind of stuff like that. The Rock's a really great radio station, though. So it just like it meant so much, and I still have it, and I still use it, and it's oh my God, how old is it now? It's at least 13 years old, and it still works. And the only thing that doesn't work on it is the power button, which sucks. But it's just it's meant so much, and I kept using it, and you know, it bums me out that I'm not going to be able to replace it and replace those songs when it finally conks out. Like, that really kind of bothers me because they're great. And I know that there's alternatives to them, obviously, but yeah, iPods were awesome. Rip the iPod. I wish it was still here. Well, it is still here for a little bit, but like I wish they kept making them.
Yeah, indeed. But there are lots of MP3 players out there, and MP3 players are pretty cool, obviously. But yeah, definitely streaming up with music file ship ownership, I guess. At any rate, let's play a song. What should we play, Amor?
I think we should play the new My Chemical Romance song.
Here's the new MCR, and here we go. And we're back. And on the other side of My Chemical Romance is Battle Sex, the hardcore band. And more, tell us about Battle Sex.
Yeah. So I found out about this band because they signed to Convault Records and they're putting out their EP with the label. And like that label's been putting out like awesome stuff, like Gels out on there. They re-released Zulu's two EPs. Just like so much great hardcore music. So they're going to be releasing an EP called The Battle Call, and they released the title track too. And the song, it's under 2 minutes. It absolutely rips. It's really heavy. There's like some D beat stuff. Like it's aggression. Like that's what you're listening to. It's just like I'm mad. The singer growls, like, just the voice is amazing, and the instruments are just, like, amazing, and it's just, you know when you're really in the mood for something that's just kind of, that sounds like destruction, and that's kind of what it was, what it is. It's a really good song, and I ended up listening to their other EP that's out now called The Boys of Rock, and it is also very, very good. So I'm very excited for this EP. I'm glad I found the band, and everything I've heard from them I've really liked. So there's nothing better than some hardcore punk. John, what do you think?
I thought it was cool. It's fast and it's furious. It's kind of what's in vogue right now, hardcore punk-wise. Like it's kind of like Warthog or that band Quarantine or that band Poison Ruin. This is the hardcore punk du jour, and it's fast and it's furious, like M. Moore says. Here's the hardcore punk du yesterday. I don't know. M. Moore, what's yesterday in French? Come on, you're Canadian. You should know this.
I know tomorrow. When you said that, I was like, oh, yeah.
Mañana in Espanol.
Damn, what is it? That's awful. Come back to me. I'll figure it out.
At any rate, Crisis, a first or early second wave UK punk band, are re-releasing their discography. This time it is called Revenge is Sweet. And it follows, it used to just be called Crisis. There are now three Crisis discographies. The first one was called, the second one was called Holocaust Hymns. The first one was called We Are All Jews and Germans. And Crisis released three singles and one mini LP or EP or whatever. And this basically is just a reissue of Holocaust Hymns. It's almost identical in track listing, except for that's out of print. So now this is how you can get those songs again. And it comes with a 7-inch. Crisis was a very cool band. And they had a lot of very political songs. Of course, they were anti-fascism, anti-Nazi, and so forth. And more, do you know what happened after Crisis broke up? When things went wonky.
The Death in June stuff?
Yes. So the Crisis broke up. And then the two main guys, Tony Wakeford and Douglas P, formed Death in June. And then Tony Wakeford left Death in June and he formed Unconquered Son with Soul Invictus. But before he did Soul Invictus, he did another band called, Above the Ruins. And so what Crisis had all these songs about how Nazis are bad and fascism is bad and, you know, so forth. The weird thing is that Death in June often used Nazi imagery, and it's unclear if they were pro or anti-Nazi. I've got a definite opinion, but then with Above the Ruins, there was one song that was strongly rumored to be a pro-fascism, pro-Nazi song. Oh. And then after Soul Invictus formed, Tony Wakeford said, yeah, some of the things we said weren't cool, and I'm not about that now. And I think he even married a black woman, actually, but I'm not sure about that. And so Tony Wakeford basically says Nazis are bad, blah, blah, blah. But they did have that very weird, short, funky period. And then Death in June, which is Douglas P., has a lot of he's had this issue for a while. And he keeps using Nazi imagery, but the weird thing is A, he won't say if he is pro or anti-Nazi or fascism or anything, But then he also is very popular in Israel, and the group's final concert was in Israel. And so I think he loves that controversy. And I think he knows what he's about, and I think he enjoys that certain people can figure out what he's about. Although I don't know that. That's just my guess. One time, I said, I'm going to solve the Death in June puzzle. And I started asking around, and I said, I'm going to do a big profile on Douglas P. And, you know, really, really shine a spotlight on this and see what the deal is. And so I kind of poked my head down into the underground, and I poked my head into the underground, and then I poked my head into the underground. And there's some pretty funky people down there. And by funky, I don't mean Nazis or anything like that. I just mean some freaked out, whacked out, bizarre people. And I'm like, you know what? And I started getting some weird emails from some weird people. And I'm like, you know what, man? I don't need this, man. You know what I mean? It's like, whatever. You know, just let, you know, I don't need to crack this along that anymore. So I noped out of there real quick. There is down in those sub layers, there are some funked out people down there, man. And I don't even necessarily mean anything illegal. I just mean weird people. Like, just, and not even cool weird, you know, just like, like, I don't want to be here weird. You know what I mean? And so I think I've got sort of an idea of what's going on with Death in June, but not enough that I could publicly – I mean, I'll tell you all after the podcast, then. Yeah. But not that I could publicly say. But he's definitely a weird guy, real weird. But the question is, M. Moore – and yes, there is strong criticism there – is Douglas P. does flirt with Nazi imagery, and he won't say that it's bad, although he certainly hasn't said it's good either. The question is that poor form, or is that art? But also, should we consider that when listening to Crisis, a band that did use Nazi imagery but was explicitly anti-Nazi and has at least five songs about how Nazis are bad? Namely, the song Holocaust, or the song Canada Commando, or the song Red Brigade, or the song Kill, 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 or the song Militant, or No Town Hall, all of which are anti-Nazi songs.
First of all, Yesterday in French is here.
Here?
Pierre.
Pierre? I thought it was Peter.
No, H.
Air? Air? No, that's Madame or Sir. Air Commandant.
Hey, there we go. I think if you use, like, Nazi imagery, you need to have a pretty good reason why you're using Nazi imagery. And I always err on the side of if there's anything.
Oh, and let me interrupt you. The thing that further twists the equation,
okay,
is Nazis were very anti-gay. Douglas P. is very gay. And that you know, that further twists it, you know.
So, oh, you think he's like reclaiming it, like with the pink triangle?
No, that's not what I'm thinking. I'll tell you what I'm thinking after the show, because I don't want to get attacked by any side, you know.
Okay.
Although I will add, well.
No, go ahead.
I'm trying to think how I could phrase this. I do not know if this is the case. Actually, here's how I'll phrase this. I do not know if this is the case with Douglas P. I don't know that at all. What I will say is I think we even talked about this on – this might have been on Punk News Podcast 500 when we talked to Steve Ignorant, or maybe it was some other interview I did with Steve Ignorant. Steve Ignorant, when after anarcho-punk was kind of, quote, over or whatever, Steve Ignorant was hanging around the post-punk goth early industrial scene. And he went to a show with the guy from what the hell's the guy's name? The freaky guy that hangs out with Nick Blinko. Dog's Blood Moon Rising. Dog's Blood Rising. What's current 93? What's the guy's name? David Tibet. He went to a gig with David Tibet, and there was like a dude there in Nazi clothing. And Steve Ignorant, who's from Crass, you know, he's like, what the hell is this? So he goes over and starts trying to fist fight the guy, and Dave Tibet's like, no, Steve, no, like, he's not a Nazi. Like the dude was kind of in that weird, like, S&M thing where S&M dude, like, you know what I mean?
Oh, and I know what you mean.
And that kind of goes hand in hand with industrial, and you know, it's a weird scene, you know what I mean? So that's what that was about. So anyways, you know, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Why you said, is he reclaiming the Nazi thing? No, yeah. I don't think he's reclaiming it. I think he's doing some sort of commentary. But I certainly don't know, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, like, you know, anything with Nazi imagery is obviously a massive red flag. And I really like black metal, and I have to be really careful, and I vet the bands I listen to, because it's like, okay, are you fascist? Okay, I'm not listening to you. Okay, are you anti-fascist? Okay, I'm listening to you, you know. So
what if they're semi-fascist?
They're in the garbage. No fascism of any kind. But like, that's the way that like Crisis used it, was in like a Reagan Youth way, you know, like how they used like KKK imagery.
With Reagan, you also have to remember Dave Insurgent was Jewish, you know, which also adds like another thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So Nazis are bad. Fascism is bad. And it's tricky to know somebody's intention when they have done a lot of anti-fascist work and then seem to flip on it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's confusing. I think that on that issue, you should be, you know, there's no gray area.
And what further complicates this is that the label that it's coming out as is a French label that does produce Death in June stuff.
Wow, there's a lot going on.
So anyways, Crisis is a great band. I'll say that. And their lyrics are cool. They're anti-fascism, anti-Nazism, as far as I can tell, which everyone agrees. But actually, like even post-Crisis, you know, the title "We Are All Germans and Jews," like you could say, that's art you have to be very careful with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Crisis, ever and Douglas P, ever a quagmire, which I think will never fully be answered. Let's go something that's less complex and just a lot more fun. Two quick things. The Senates and Circle Jerks are going on tour. Not going on tour. They're playing like three or two shows together. But the cool thing is, and you can find this at the Punk News website, is for their Berkeley shows where both the Senates and Circle Jerks are playing, they combine the Circle Jerks and the Senates logo. And I got to say, this is probably the best band logo mashup I've ever seen. Like, they put the Milo body on the Circle Jerk Skank Man, which I thought was real cool.
And he has a bonus cup.
And he's got a bonus cup. However, what I will say is, here's where I would say the slight controversy is that no one mentioned except for me, so I don't even know if that makes it controversial. The Circle Jerk Skank Man was designed by Sean Carey. However, when the Circle Jerk signed their contract and when Sean Carey gave the Skank Man to the record label, the contract was structured in such a way that they took ownership of the Skank Man and Sean Carey did not get anything but the most base compensation. She got like $100 or $200 for it. Meanwhile, the record label went on to sell hundreds or even hundreds of thousands of shirts with the logo on it and otherwise used the logo. And even the band wanted to make sure, state that she owned the Skank Man. But the record label, of course, famously said, "We don't care. We own it. She signed the contract and that's it." And so it was kind of a situation of a naive young artist creating a very iconic image, and that image basically, I don't want to say getting stolen, but taking out of their hands, maybe by unfair footing. And so this new image was created by a very popular contemporary punk rock artist, Chris Sherry, who redrew the image. I noted that he put Sherry in the exact image where Sean Carey originally would put her name. And I did think maybe it was kind of poor form just to completely, Sean Carey is deceased, RIP sadly, but like, yet again, she kind of gets ripped off. I thought maybe it would have been nice if he had left her name on there and put his own name on there as well, maybe, or something like that, you know? Because Chris Sherry didn't even create the Skank Man, and he certainly didn't create the Milo. So for him to plaster his name on that where Sean Carey's name used to be, I thought, maybe not. I mean, not the worst crime in the world, but maybe not in great taste. That's what I thought.
I didn't notice the name thing.
Yeah, if you look at the foot on the thing, you see it says Chris Sherry. Originally, that said Sean Carey. Now, of course, Sean Carey did not create the Milo caricature, mm-hmm. but she did create the Skank Man, and quite, you know, quite famously, the Skank Man was, like I said, not stolen from her, but taken from her under less than nice circumstances. And so I thought maybe he should have put her name and maybe his name there or something. And, I mean, not like it cost me anything. She's dead, R.I.P. So it would just been a nice thing to do. I thought, you know,
yeah,
to kind of like Chris Sherry's a cool artist. He does lots of cool stuff. But a big part of his thing is just redrawing iconic images. Like there's a whole line of Chris Sherry t-shirts where he just redraws the album cover and people buy it and love it, which I've got mixed feelings on that. But if people want it and the bands want to do it, that's fine, you know. But yeah. So he's kind of saying, I'm the guy that is preserving the history of punk rock and hardcore. I know there's your punk rock and hardcore. I'm the guy these legendary bands come to redo their art. Fine. So you would think he'd be aware of this conflict and would have put her name on the boot where her name used to be, and then maybe put his name somewhere else, or even right next to it. You know what I mean? Instead of where her name used to be. I thought that was kind of not cool, you know?
Yeah.
That being said, the image itself is very cool. I would love to have one of these t-shirts.
Well, it'd be a great t-shirt. Yeah, it looks awesome.
I'm sure they're going to make a t-shirt out of it, which they should, and it's pretty cool. At any rate, so that'd be a cool gig, man, to send it to Circle Jerks. Of course, I guess I already saw the Punk Rock Boring last year because it was Circle Jerks and Descendants headlining. So here's something that's a bit more quagmire, twisty. Two more stories. Black Flag is playing four shows with Total Chaos in October on the West Coast. And it's the first Black Flag shows, at least since COVID and you know, in a while, I would say maybe in, I don't know, 4 years. The question and more, does anyone give a shit? Of course, Black Flag now is Greg Ginn, probably Mike V of the Rats, and two other schmoes. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, but two other guys that really have no connection to Black Flag and are hired guns, which is, you know. So the question is, and of course, 10 years ago now, when Flag re-arose, Black Flag said, you can't play, we're going to play. It's me, Greg Ginn, and whoever else I want to hang around with. We're Black Flag. And there was a huge battle, and everyone got all upset. Most people took Flag side of a Black Flag. There were some, I guess, Greg Ginn apologized and say, no, without Greg Ginn, it's not Black Flag, you know. And Greg Ginn sued Flag, and it was a whole thing. And then after everybody saw both bands, almost everybody agreed Flag just destroyed Greg Ginn's Black Flag, and they really did. So now the question, Emmore, Black Flag's gone on tour for four shows. Does anyone care at all? I mean, for real. Like, is seeing Black Flag like seeing the Dead Kennedys now, or is it even less so? You know, Right Side of My Mind. What band is that? Queer Pills. What's the name of that band?
I don't know.
I know. Not Agnostic Front. Oh my God, it's a great band, Angry Samoans. When you go see Angry Samoans, it's the drummer and three dudes. You know, I'm like, well, sad. I mean, I went at Punk Rock Bowling. Actually, I went to see Angry Samoans, but I made a mistake. It's not Angry Samoans. It's Angry Samoan, which is the drummer and three dudes. So, so Descendants, Flag, Dead Kennedys, Angry Samoan. Where does Black Flag rank these days when it comes to do you care, Emmore?
I do not. I would go see Flag in a heartbeat.
Because it's awesome. But
yeah, like it sounds great. And like you want to see the songs done well. You want to see them done justice. Like, you know, with like people who are actually in the band at one point or another, not just like one guy. And I do not like Greg Ginn. I don't like him, so I don't want to give him money.
Why don't you like Greg Ginn? I'm curious.
There was that whole thing where it was like his ex-wife wanted the kids because he.
Oh yeah. So what I'm more referring to is Greg Ginn was involved in a parental lawsuit, which was weirdly is Ron Reyes was fired by. Of all, Ron Reyes was fired by Mike V on stage at a quote Black Flag show, which was so lame because Ron's the man. He's a great singer and he's a nice guy. And so he was called in as a witness in Greg Ginn's child custody battle. And Greg and Ron's opinion was that Greg was not a fit parent. And that's all public information. I agree with it. I agree with him. Greg Ginn's a dick. And I like honestly, like, in some ways, I was like, can't be annoyed or mad at him, but because, like, he clearly has got a lot of problems, like deep, deep problems, yeah. You know? But that being said, everyone that knows him hates him. Like, all the other members of Black Flag hate him. You know, Keith Morse, Henry Rollins, Chuck Dukowski, Dez Kadena, Ron Reyes, Robo, they all hate him. So at some point, you got to say, well, does this guy have problems, or is he just a huge dick, you know? He's an amazing guitarist, but honestly, as modern Black Flag shows, amazing guitar alone cannot carry a show, as the last Black Flag show that I saw with Mike V and Greg Ginn, which was frankly terrible and boring. It was bad. I would actually probably still go just to go. I mean, listen, I would go if it was like $20 or $22. I wouldn't go if it was like $30 or $40. But I would go just to, I don't know, maybe you'll see something cool. But that being said, is Flag versus Black Flag. Flag beats them every day of the week plus another 4 more days. Like, it's like so much better and cool and fun. That being said, it's just sad. Like, Black Flag was kind of the greatest hardcore band ever. And people saw them that way. And really, the only guy that harmed legacy is Greg Ginn. And at this point, the legacy of Black Flag over the past 10 years has been severely damaged by Greg Ginn. Not only with Greg Ginn's version of Black Flag with Mike V or whoever, but also with his letter towards... Like, Greg Ginn kind of had the win in his pocket when Flag went on... And from a pure strategy standpoint, when Flag went on tour, Greg Ginn could have said, well, I'm not in it, and it's not Black Flag without me. And Flag doesn't really have a response to that, because in a way that's true. You know, Greg Ginn wrote most of the early songs, but not all of them. And the guitar is a huge part of Black Flag. Flag itself was awesome, but that being said, is people do like the idea of original members. So if all Greg Ginn did said, I'm not in it, so it's not really Black Flag, it'd be hard for Flag to get over that hump. But luckily for Flag, Greg Ginn threw his thing and said, well, I'm going to be the real Black Flag. And they were terrible, which just made people love Flag that much more. You know what I mean? And so Greg Ginn's biggest enemy is Greg Ginn, for sure. You know? So no one cares. This announcement really was, you know, introduced with really a whisper, in that, like, when Black Flag first reunited, people were like, oh, my God, it's Greg Ginn. He's doing stuff again. People were very excited. And they saw him, they didn't care anymore, and so there's nothing left, sadly, I guess, with Black Flag. Flag, hopefully, will tour again, and I know Keith Morris had said it's not out of the question, like festivals and that kind of stuff, so maybe we'll see Flag again. Last story, Max Creeps, they put out a new video for the track Hung, Drawn, and Quartered, and more. Did you enjoy the new Max Creeps song?
I love the video. The video is hilarious because it has... Dan Jones, who's a historian, and he does Secrets of Great British Castles. So he's like, this whole thing shot in black and white, and he's like, they're in, I guess, a castle or something. And he's talking about, like, the process of, like, hanging, drawing, and quartering, and, like, all this kind of stuff, and it's, like, you know, gross and whatever. And then he's throughout the video... there's one line where it's like, don't take an apple that isn't yours. And he's like holding an apple and like doing the no, don't take this thing. And that just, it was so funny because it looks so serious and then it's just kind of silly. And it was hilarious. I loved it. Yeah, the song wasn't what I was expecting. it was a little more like there's a spoken word intro. There's... more of like sort of like a doomy thing, more kind of metal-ish than punk. And yeah, like it's really interesting because the chorus is just like hung, drawn, and quartered, and then it's like layered. So it sounds, it has kind of a haunting sort of like feel to it, and then the lyrics are like and then they'll like cut off your dick and kick you in the nuts. So it's just it's an interesting balance. And then just yep, it's 1424 and like yep, looks it was great. John, what did you think?
It's cool. I think Max Sheep is betting very smart in that not all the songs are straight up punk bangers. He's almost like a flipper kind of song or something. And so it's cool. And I think the variety is cool and the self-awareness and amusing aspects are cool. And they're just doing everything right. And again, it was a thrill to have them on the podcast.
Yeah.
So let's play Hung, Drawn, and Quarter. Any last comments for this week for the listeners, Em, before we send them out with Max Creeps?
Check out the interviews that I have up on Punk News. We have Guilt, we have Maddie Grace, we have Boring Girls, and there will be the wonderful folks from Tarantula Tapes next.
Yeah, and Moore's been doing a great job with the interview, so be sure to check them out. Some of them are like really extended, which is very cool. So be sure to check out M. Moore's interviews, and you can reach the podcast at punknews.org, and we'll see you next week. And this is Max Creeps doing Hung, Drawn, and Quartered.
Life is nonstop don'ts and can'ts. They step on you like they step on ants. They put you in chains and throw you in the dungeon, waiting for the judge to kill you next month.
If it ain't